Hello and welcome to another episode of My Backstage Pass. This is your host, Lee Zimmerman, with my producer co-host, Billy Hubbard. And today we're excited to have none other than Mr. Dana Cooper joining us for this particular episode. We're live here at The Bird in the Book. We're recording this for posterity. Billy will let us know when it's available to stream. And by the way, thank you, Roger Harb over there. Roger, who is recording this on video for posterity. Thank you, Roger. Roger's a great guy. He's my, look, he's so businesslike, he's not acknowledging his greatness here.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Roger. So the format here is very informal. It's kind of like the Actor's Studio. If any of you remember that program, the Actor's Studio, where the host would sit and talk to a famous actor about their career, I'm going to be talking to a famous musician about his career. So, Dana, let's start from the beginning. You have had a storied career, and I guess the first major break that you had was when you were assigned to Elektra Records in the 90s. So you then, over the years, have transitioned into an independent artist, which is another animal altogether. Yeah. So what has that transition been like for you?
Well, first of all, thank you, Lee, for doing this. I think this is a fabulous idea. To do this series, and I'm really privileged to be here. It's interesting. I've been on, there have been lots of trajectories since the album on Elektra in 1967. And I quit playing music after I got dropped from that label. Well, I went back for a year to Hollywood and knocked on doors and drove cabs and worked in convalescent hospitals and did what I had to do to make a living and pay my rent. And kept going, knocking on doors there in Los Angeles, and just finally gave up on it, and nearly lost my mind. And then I went to back to college for a while, studied horticulture. Came from a long line of folks with green thumbs, and mine is kind of a pale green, but I can kind of grow some stuff. And I love doing that. I love gardening, so I did that for about a year. And I realized after I saw this Buddy Holly story movie came out. I think it was 78 or something, and I finally just picked up and moved to Texas, where I had an option of joining this band with a guy, an old cohort of mine named Shake Russell. And that was really the restart for me, being in that band for several years. Then I had my own power trio band, DC3, and that was like, we put out indie albums then, I put out like a cassette tape and a couple of vinyls and a 45. And then that fell apart, and I started doing my solo thing again. And and again, ended up on a couple other bigger, smaller labels like Compass. And then also in between those labels, I've done my own thing too. So I just kind of kept it going. I've been very fortunate to be able to do that, actually. It's not that easy.
Well, I know. I mean, people look at performers and say, oh, what a great job. But they don't realize the struggles and the effort that goes into being successful. And you, sir, he's a very modest guy, this Dana Cooper. But he won an award. You won the 2014 Heritage Musician Award from the Pilgrim Center for the Arts in Kansas City. No small, acknowledgement there. And you won the Folk Alliance International's 2015 Spirit of Folk Awards. And in addition to that, you had an album, Miracle Mile, that was nominated for a Nashville Music Award as Best Pop Album and was chosen by Performing Songwriter magazine as one of the top DIY recordings of the year. I'm reading this all in Wikipedia. You know, when somebody is in Wikipedia, I was telling Dana earlier, when you're in Wikipedia, you're like famous. How many of us have our names in Wikipedia? He does. I thought it was pretty impressive. So You had an album called Harry Truman Built a Road that was named one of the best records of 2002 by the Tennessean and chosen as one of the best DIY recordings of that year. Another album of yours, Made of Mud, was released on King Easy Records in 2005 and won award for the Best Male Songwriter by Indie Acoustic Project. So, I mean, you have a really storied career. And I'm wondering, when you win all those accolades and receive that kind of attention, does it sort of set a higher bar? Can it almost be intimidating to know, well, you know, I've got to measure up, as you have, but...
Sure, I guess it is kind of intimidating, you know, when you mention it. Because like anyone, I suppose, you know, when you have an acknowledgement like that, it's you hope to get another one. It's kind of addictive, you know. So the last kind of big award I got, I think, was the Folk Alliance Award in 2015. But, you know, it has been an interesting time since then, too, and lots of things happened along the way. I just sort of, I don't take those things, like, super seriously. I mean, I really appreciate them. No doubt about it, but that's, you know, again, that's not why I started to do it, and that's not why I keep doing it. I mean, it's those things encourage you to keep going, I guess, just like applause does, you know, or a little royalty check, you know. So yeah, I mean, really, I think I had this friend, he played in a band with me years ago named Riley Osborne, kind of an infamous and famous keyboard player, incredible piano player, and he was like super cool, and it was, we were in a band that was just rife with difficulties, psychological, you know, lack of communication, and just crazy egos and other elements that contributed to that. And Riley was always like kind of like Switzerland. He was just, you know, nothing would faze him. He wouldn't take a side or anything, and he'd always pull me aside when I was about to pop a screw, you know, or something. He'd say, "Man, don't take it seriously. Don't take it." Any of it too seriously. And so as far as the music itself goes, I do take that very seriously, and the work. And but, you know, the money, the awards, all that stuff, that's great. That encourages you to keep. If I didn't get any awards or no one paid me anything to sing for them, I'm not sure how I would function. I'd go back to being a nurse's aide, I guess.
You were a nurse's aide?
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you for that. We need more nurses' aides now. Thank you for that, Dana Cooper. Oh, okay. Yeah, I have back issues, too. If you have any... Anyway.
I got some stretches I'll show you.
Okay, that'll be great. how many albums have you recorded in total, Dana? Have you kept count?
I was keeping count for a while. I think this new one coming out in February, I think that's the 30th album, I think.
The 30th album.
Now, they weren't all, I mean, some of these were, Shake, Wrestle, and I recorded quite a few things. Yes. In different configurations. I did some things with DC3, Nuclear Family, my bands, and then solo, and I did an album with a Swedish artist, Annika Feeling. I've done, a few things like that, but I'm on 30 albums, let's put it that way.
You're on 30 albums.
And I wrote songs on 30 of those albums.
Look, I have.
Oh, yeah.
I have. An artifact. Well, it's, I don't know if you'd call it an artifact, but one of Dana's early albums with the fella he just mentioned, Shake Russell. When did this come out, Dana? This is it's a little worn, but nevertheless, it's an artifact.
I think it's around 81.
I think. Yeah.
I think that's the same year we did Austin City on the show.
Okay. All right. I'm happy to have one of Dana's seminal albums in my collection, and you can't see it out there, but there are two little tiny pictures of himself with Shake Russell. And I honestly didn't know which one was you, Dana. I didn't know, but
well, that's probably one of the ugliest album covers ever. We hated that album cover. We had the record company hired a guy in Austin to paint our portrait, And it was a funny moment. We went into the, they called us into the record company one day, said, come in and look at this portrait the guy did of you. We're going to use this for the cover. And it was on an easel with a cloth over, you know, and we sat down and he pulled that cloth off. And the painting was great, except that our eyes looked like doll's eyes. They looked, our shark eyes, they just looked weird. And Shake and I just kind of looked at each other. And there was that uncomfortable moment of, well, no, we don't like this. And this guy had painted, you know, Willie Nelson. He painted all these people. He was a good painter. But somehow he missed out on in the eye department. And maybe a better solution would have just been put sunglasses on us. Maybe that would have worked. I don't know. But, yeah. So we kind of raised a stink and said, no, we don't want that. And that was the cover that we ended up with, which is just... It's horrible. It's ugly. I think the shark eyes would have been better, the doll eyes. But anyway. Really? The lyric sheet's nice.
See, folks, this is the kind of inside scoop that we are happy to give you. Dana Cooper did not like the original album cover because it had what? Dog eyes?
Doll eyes.
They look like glass. Doll eyes. Well, that's not good. That's not good. I just wonder, though, what it's like when the record company honchos are sitting there and they're making a big to-do, and the artist is sitting there, and you go, yeah, I don't think so. I mean, that's got to be awkward, no?
Yeah, and it goes both ways, of course. Yeah, it really is all about communication, isn't it? I mean, the whole ball of wax, it really is. I mean, from creating any kind of art, trying to do art and commerce, try to communicate with the people you're in business with while you're writing music or painting, whatever you're doing, writing a book. You know, I mean, you know about that. You've probably met with some of that difficulty in the publishing world, I would imagine. No, it's all smooth for you.
I will say this, and I hope there are no editors in the room, but editors are the lowest life form on the planet. If anybody says that I said that, I will deny it, but he brought it up. So, what can I tell you? So you have really made the transition again from being on a major label to doing it DIY. And, well, I mean, what's the difference? And what are the challenges, the advantages, and... You know, what's involved going from the corporate world to doing it yourself?
Well, for one thing, you know, when I was on that label, when I was 21, okay, I gave it away. And I didn't know what I was doing, you know? I mean, musically, I kind of did. And creatively, it was a lot of fun because I got to work with, you know, Leland Sklar, Russ Kunkel, Jim Gordon, all these incredible musicians. I got to pick my musicians. The label gave me that control to pick who I wanted to produce it and to play on it. And that was kind of unusual. So that was great. But, you know, I didn't realize quite what I had, and I don't think the label quite realized what it had. So we just sort of, it didn't work. And when I came out of that, I was just... You know, I did a whole other project up in Seattle about 4 or 5 months after I got dropped from Elektra. Marlon Green, who signed me to Elektra, called me up to Seattle to work Danny Kaye and Lester Smith. Remember Danny Kaye, the singer, comedian, Danny Kaye? Well, I didn't work with him, but he and Lester Smith owned hotels and recording studios and stuff. And they had this incredible world-class studio in Seattle with 3 rooms. And he brought in engineers from Electric Ladyland, from Muscle Shoals, and just had incredible engineers there. And Marlon was brought in to kind of head up the competitive label section of it. It had been a jingle building. They'd just done commercials, basically, there. They wanted to get into competitive records and record bands, so they brought in a group from Canada and just all over. There were several of us that were doing these recording projects there. And then when they finished it, they were going to pitch it to labels. Well, they just, after about a year or 9 months, we'd recorded 15 songs and we're just about to start pitching it around. And they just said, nah, we're not going to do that. and they just put everything on a shelf. So that whole recording project I worked on for 9 months, I never saw. I don't have a copy. I have like a copy of a copy of some of the songs. I never got the masters. No one can find them. So that was kind of another, it was a double whammy. I just kind of withdrew for a while. But you know, as far as now being an independent artist, this is a long answer to your question. Probably more, the difference now is that you almost don't need a record label, you know? I mean, I'm not sure how much power a label has anymore except for just a limited number of artists. Obviously, it's always been that. You know what, it used to be top 40 when I was a kid. That's not even, it was like top 20 or something now. I don't even know. But it's a very narrow space for artists to squeeze through and be big. And there's only, you know, there's a finite number of those artists that are ever big. And they're the ones that sort of inspire young artists to, I'm going to make a lot of money and I'm going to be... And, you know, it's now it's a time when you can actually build an audience, make your own recordings, promote them yourself, with even not much funding. Or you can find a way to come up with funding. Like, that's what I've done for several of my projects. I get my fans, diehard fans that love what I do, and, you know, they'll contribute on a site like Indiegogo, where they get something in return for doing it, you know, but it also gives me the funding to actually do the work. So I'm working now. I'm probably accomplishing as much now as an independent artist as I would be on a major label right now, because a major label, for one, isn't going to sign me anyway. And if they did, I don't know, you know, how well they're really promoting people. I think they rely more and more on the artists to do a lot of their own promotion and even funding now. You know, in the time when Elektra Records signed me, they gave me a whole lot of money to make the record. I mean, that's the most money I've ever spent in a studio, was on that album. That was money that, you know, I had to recoup before I ever made any money. So I never made any money. I never recouped on it. But so there's that difference. Now I just think it's a better time for indie artists. Only real problem with that is that I think that there's so many indie artists out there, and we're kind of flooding the whole market. I honestly don't know how people even listen to music anymore, how they hear it, what they experience when they hear it. I don't know what happened when music, you know, became free and how that's changed everything so much. I think artists can benefit from being on a label, obviously, if the label is willing to actually do the hard work, put in the hours and put in the money. But you know, you might as well try it on your own if you have an audience at all, I think.
Well, we're happy that you have persisted, and you have a wonderful array of albums over there on the merch table. We'll get to that later. But I think, speaking of how people hear albums, I think that it's time for them to hear some of your music right now. Okay. So we'll do that. How about that for a segue? You know, I am a professional. I'm the master of the segue.
So I'm going to play this song first, because this is a song I wrote about my dad, George Cooper.
Sit up here.
George David Cooper Jr. And he was an amazing father to have. He was a very gentle man. He never raised a hand to me except in kindness. And he was always super supportive of me. And when I was a little bitty kid, actually when I was 2 years old, he started taking me to the bars with him. He was a music enthusiast and a drinking enthusiast. And so he would take me to the bars, and he'd play the jukebox and sit me up on a bar or on a table and get me to sing along with Hank Williams or Ernest Tubb. And took me to my first concert when I was 3 to see Ernest Tubb in Kansas City, Kansas, about 60 miles from where we lived then. I wrote this for Dad when he retired from the steel mill many years later. Steel town shut down. cowtown. It's just a ghost now. Old granddaddy's rolling over in his lonesome grave. I'm left to face this brave new age. Out of place with rage. Oh, how do I fight what I can't understand? One hand tied behind my back, I'm an old-fashioned man in a new age world. I'm an old-fashioned man in a new age world. Showdown on foreign ground. I never thought my kid would have to fight the way I did. Nuclear meltdown. How far down in the ground can you keep that plutonium hid? And I'm left to face this brave new age. Out of place with race. Oh, how do I fight what I can't understand? One hand tied behind my back. I'm an old-fashioned man in a new age world. I'm an old-fashioned man in a new age world. I miss those bad old days. When we just dreamed about a better way, a better way. I'm left to face this brave new age. Out of place with the race. Oh, how do I fight what I can't understand? One hand tied behind my back. I'm an old-fashioned man in a new age world. I'm an old-fashioned man in a new age world. I'm an old-fashioned man in a new age world. Steel town shut down. Oh, cow town is just a ghost now. Another one?
Yeah.
Alright. Let's see here. I think I'll do a new song here. This is I've got a single out there in the digital world. You can purchase it everywhere you buy your music. Online, it's from a CD I've been working on. It's coming out in February, but the first single is out now. It's called Always Old Friends. I wrote this to an old friend of mine, Robert Weingartz, in Nashville. But you can hear this single out there. You can hear it being played on all kinds of Spotify playlists and some radio stations right now around the country, just different spots, you know. Call your local station and request it, because there's a darn good chance they have it somewhere and they're not playing it. So there you go. Always old friends. One about friendship. Old friend of mine, our faces aligned with years of worrying weather. We crossed the line, took that ride, and we always faced the battle together. We done right and we done wrong. Tossed the dice and rang the gong. Always old friend, never let go, friend. Oh, stay with me till the end. Always old friend. They say you can't make old friends. You were my friend the moment I met you. And we can't live those old days again. But then why the heck would we want to? How we'd run and how we'd fall. Yes, I remember it all. Always old friend, don't let go, friend. Or together until the end. Always old friend. Man, we've known the best and the worst in each other. We've blessed and cursed and forgiven each other. It's hard to tell where one begins and the other one ends. Always old friend. Old friend of mine, now it's your time to leave this old world behind you. We'll go on and shine. I'll hold the line, and where the song never ends, I'll find you. I'll be lonesome. Until then, I will carry you within. We'll always be old friends. Never let go, friends. Or together through thick and thin. We'll always be old friends. Crazy rock and roll friends. Or together we can only. All I know is that we'll meet again. Yes, I'll see you where the song never ends. Always old friend.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So, you hear everything okay out there? You're good? Okay, cool. I'll do the title song off that new CD that's coming out in February. It's called I Can Face the Truth. And this is one of those little songs. You know, they come from unsuspected places. It's not like I sit down and go, okay, I'm going to write a song. You know, what am I going to write about? I mean, I do sometimes. But an idea, a thought, something that happens, something someone else says, a snatch of conversation somewhere, a book, a film. It could come from anywhere. And I walk a lot. And every day I walk. And I usually have a notebook with me and often write things down when I'm walking around. And I often walk through cemeteries. There's an old cemetery there in Nashville. George Jones is buried there, and Marty Robbins, a bunch of old country folks are there. I was walking around there one day and just thinking about life, thinking about, you know, our time here and on earth, and this little song popped in my head. Sun to hide behind the clouds. I want to run and never fall down. I'd be number one if I could figure it out. I can face the truth, but please not today. I can face the truth, but please not today. I stood so long I'd like to sit down. I sung my song, can I take my bow? I can go long, baby, just not right now. I can face the truth, but please not today. I can face the truth, but please not today. I can be a fool, I can be a creep. I can be so cruel as to where I can sleep. You've got your complaints, give it to me straight. But baby, could it wait just one more day? The truth will set me free, the truth will slap my face. Truth is I'm weak, truth is I'm afraid. Afraid of my own life, the damage that I've done. Afraid what I'm not, what I might become. Yes, I can face the truth, please not today. Cut down the flowers, lay them on the grave. Don't count the hours, time will not be saved. I'm not a coward, but I'm tired of being brave. I can face the truth, but please not today. I can face the truth, but please not today. I can face the truth, but please not today. Thank you.
We'll play a little more because so Dana, you have a new album coming out again. What's the name of that? That's coming out in February.
I Can Face the Truth.
I Can Face the Truth. Okay, very good. A lot of courage it takes in being able to face the truth. And by the way, Dana. Did you have anybody writing the liner notes for that particular album? Dana, what do you think? What do you think?
I actually called on this incredible music writer and author named Lee Zimmerman to write the liner notes for my new CD. And they're right there in there, Lee. Every word. Beautiful. Beautiful work. Thank you for doing it.
Oh, well, my pleasure. It took a few edits. Well, I started out, I said, you know, this Dana Cooper guy's pretty good, and they thought it needed to be a little more emphatic. But no, it was really an honor to have you do that, to ask me to do that. But those songs are really, really wonderful, and you kind of talked a little bit about how the music comes to you, but do you have a particular idea in mind, or is it just sort of you're walking through the cemeteries, which, by the way, Dana, it's kind of weird. You're walking through cemeteries?
Okay. Time, not at night.
Okay, that's good. Do you like bats? Do you like bats, Dana? Okay. But, okay, yeah, they are, sure. Walk us through the process, really, of how a song comes to you just sort of out of the ether like that.
Well, it is kind of out of the ether, you know, and so much of it is a mystery to me, honestly, still. You know, I mean, we all walk around thinking about things all day long, probably very similar things, you know, why we're here and or things that upset us or things that make us feel good or inspire us, love the people we love. And there's stories, you know, so those are kind of always knocking around inside your person anyway, you know. And that's where, like, for instance, I think where you really see this, obviously, is when you co-write a song with someone. And you both come into the room and you... if you're comfortable with the person, if you know them or just comfortable with them, unless one of you has a specific idea to start with, which is usually the case, but sometimes not, and you just start talking to each other. Again, it's that communication thing. And as you're talking, you start talking about the things that are concerning you in the moment, either one of you, both of you, and you have this conversation, and out of that, of course, you're sort of mining for a song idea when you're doing that, but you're also just trying to relate to the person and share a story. So out of that, you know, you'll come up with something, and it just comes really directly out of that conversation. I have a song on the new CD that was written with a friend. We were talking about her son, who she had this beautiful melody she shared with me. So I'd love to write with that. What are we going to write about? And we just started talking, and she's talking about her son who's has addiction problems and what that's like. You know, he's a grown man now. How she can't really, you know, retrieve him, save him. He's got to kind of find his own bottom and start up from there, you know. And that's a conversation I've had with many friends, of course, over the years. That song directly came out of that, just the talking about their relationship to each other. She sort of started speaking to him through the song, you know. And that was a great way to channel that. And but it's just like you know, someone coming up with a idea for a painting or for a dance, or I mean, you know, there's that element of where does it come from? There's a craft part of it, and you can go, okay, this is what you do to choreograph a song, or this is what you do to write a song, you know. These steps, you can, that's how I started learning to write songs, was breaking down songs I liked. So I'd write them out by hand. Okay, this is a verse, you know, this is a pre-chorus, this is a chorus, this is a bridge. That's how you write these things. And just kind of studied it that way. But as far as the actual inspiration for something, you know, that's a mysterious part of it to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kind is.
Well, I'm curious then, who would you list as your seminal influences? I mean, who, back in the day, who did you hear and say, I want to do that?
Oh, yeah, well, sure.
Yeah, back in the day, I mean, my gosh, you know, so many people have inspired and influenced me over the years. But early on, you know, before I wrote songs, when I was 13, I started writing songs, and that was at a time when I was listening to the Beatles and the Stones and the Zombies and Peter Paul and Mary and a lot of folk music. Of course, Motown stuff as well. So all those things really inspired me and kind of informed me, you know, musically. Of course, Hank Williams, very early on as a little kid, I mean, some of that stuff was some of the earliest stuff. Ray Charles always super inspired me as just a performer, as a singer. But my dad always had the Johnny Cash and, you know, Buck Owens and Merle Haggard, all those people too. I mean, it was a very, my father, I think he had such eclectic taste in music. He liked popular music, pop music, you know, Mantovani Strings, Tommy Dorsey, Bill Haley Comets, Lefty Frizzell, I mean, just all over the place. And that stuff, we always had all that in the house. Didn't have much in the way of jazz or, he did have Ray Charles and Nat King Cole and a lot of, you know, kind of more soulful artists, but he didn't really listen to jazz much or classical music. And I made fun of those things until I grew up and left home and had a roommate that had this whole collection of classical and jazz music, and I started listening to it, and it was like, oh, I kind of missed out on a lot. So there's always plenty to, you know, to inspire you out there and inform you.
It's interesting that you mentioned Peter Paul and Mary, because, Billy, you'll remember we had Noel Paul Stuckey on our podcast, and my wife Elisa and I had seen Peter Paul and Mary up in Canada at the Mariposa Festival, and Peter actually, as we were walking out, you'll hang in with me for a minute while I tell the story. Okay, thank you. So as we were walking out, Peter actually came up to Elisa and put his arm around her and started walking her towards the hospitality tent. He literally abducted Elisa. It was really kind of strange. However, I have my revenge because I do an impression of Peter Yarrow. Yes, I do. I wish I could play guitar, but it goes a little like this. This is Peter in concert. It's like, puff the magic dragon, puff the magic dragon, lives by the sea, so on and so forth. So, okay, well, what can I tell you? A little bit of humor doesn't go very long. I could have cut that part out, right? I want to talk to you about this. Thank you. Thank you, Dana. You were already paid, though, weren't you? Okay. We're going to let Dana do some other songs, do a few more songs. And then if you all have any questions for Dana, we can make this audience participation. I also want to talk to you about this Beatles, Let It Be, and how you might relate to their in the studio. But in the meantime, why don't we let you...
More songs?
Yeah, more songs.
Okay.
I'm an interviewer, not a technician, damn it. Again, the audience has gone silent on me, Dana.
I don't know.
Hopefully you can bring them back.
Yeah.
I was driving home from Texas to Nashville after a couple of weeks on the road, and I was driving all day, and that's often a really good time for me to come up with ideas. I just mutter them into my little recorder, and I was thinking about the 60s, the late 60s, how badly I wanted to be a hippie. And I was a Catholic high school kid, and I had to have real short hair and wear a uniform all week. And on the weekends, I would put on the peace symbol and love beads and Mary's shirt or a snap button shirt and my jeans and my moccasin boots that I bought at Tom McCann for $10 with the fringe around the tops of them. And I go down to, I take this old guitar here, I got it in 1967. I take this, it was a new guitar then, down to the Love Inns in Kansas City, a Kansas City Love Inn from Independence, Missouri, about 18 miles away. And Kansas City Love Inn is about as exotic as it sounds to you, probably. But for me, you know, living there in Independence, Missouri, where you couldn't do anything but get in trouble, really, it was quite a playground, quite an experience to go down there. By the University of Missouri, on Sunday afternoons in the springs and summers, the late 60s, early 70s, they'd have love-ins. Bands would play music all day. Thousands of people gathered in this big park. And it was always very peaceful, and it was just a great experience. I go down there and try to meet some hippies, and I was shunned, really. I mean, I was kind of like the human cue ball. I'd walk up to a group of people, and they'd all disperse in different directions. And I said, what's the problem, you know? I got the peace symbol and the moccasin boots, and, you know, of course, I had no hair. And so one day I'm standing there amongst some young hippie guys, and they got really quiet, and one of them looked at me and goes, "Are you a narcotics agent?" So much for being cool and hip. But I had music, and that was kind of what kept me going. And I met this girl. And I was thinking back on this. What a strange thing it was. This girl sitting on the lawn playing a flute quite well. I sat down next to her, got my guitar out, and we jammed. We played Season of the Witch for about 30 minutes. That's kind of what you did that summer. And we talked, really liked her. She said, "Well, I got to get home. You know, my sister's getting married later today." At this point, I had an old car my dad had bought for me, 1960 Dodge Belvedere, the big fins, push-button transmission, couch seats. I was hopeful. She said, "Sure, I'll take a ride home." So I started taking her home. She's directing me through the streets of Kansas City, deeper and deeper into a neighborhood called Mission Hills. It's where the wealthiest families in Kansas City live. We pulled up in front of a mansion. Actually had a turret on the side of the house. Looked like a castle. We go inside, and her father comes walking down the staircase in his tuxedo. His silver hair is perfect, and he stops halfway down. He looks down at me, standing there with his daughter, in my little hippie outfit, and his eyes kind of run up and down. They stopped on my moccasin boots. He kind of smirked. I knew it was the end of it right there. So thinking about that on this long drive home, I wrote down some lines about it. I got home and got the guitar out and wrote this song. It's called "Bird on the Wing." I was a bit
sailor. She was a queen. I played the guitar. She danced and sang. Light as a sparrow. She lifted off the ground. I was a scarecrow. She smiled at my frown. Her neck was so cool. A dandelion ring. A flower unfolding. A bird on the wing. I whispered, Jesse. Girl, I could love you. Then I genuflected and unlaced her shoe. Her iron hair tumbled all down in my face. We kissed and we fumbled in a clumsy embrace. There for one moment, underneath the green trees, a flower unfolding, a bird on the wing. She lived in a mansion with a prince and a king, and a woman on horseback with a porcelain face. Her servants looked through me. The dog tugged on its chain. Her parents looked sideways. They sneered at my name. Love when it is new is a delicate thing. Flower unfolding, bird on the wing. She cried when I left her. The sky cruel blue. Our hearts pressed together as they both broke in two. While a party of sparrows sad lovely tune. Over my shoulder, the last thing I knew, her face in the window, her hand raised to me, a flower unfolding, a bird on the wing. Oh, flower unfolding, bird on the wing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, Lee mentioned the Beatles, so I think I'm going to switch guitars again and do this song. Called In My Living Room. A song that came out of my wild imagination. I was thinking back on my dad bringing the Meet the Beatles album home for the first time. He would stop by their local record store a lot of times on his way home from work, like on Fridays, and he'd see what was new in the little window there. The lady that owned the record store, you know, put new albums in the window. And he saw this Beatle album in there. And he'd heard them do the song Till There Was You, which was one of his and my mother's many favorite songs from World War II era. And they did that song on there. Plus, they did a song called A Star Standing Here. And he met my mom when she was just 17, if you know what I mean. So he related to those. He brought the thing home. He came in the door with his hard hat on, his metal lunch pail in one hand, and Meet the Beatles in the other. And I was like, what's a Beatle? And the ride took off from there. It got to where every Christmas, all I cared about, really, was getting the new Beatle album. And oddly enough, Lee, they released one every Christmas just for me. Amazing. So I was thinking about that and how, you know, we all did kind of, as with anyone that you're a super fan of, I suppose, you kind of hold them, you know, as yours. And I was thinking about that, and I was also remembering that I was listening to this Beatle album. It was a Rubber Soul. I'd just gotten it for Christmas, and I had it on the record player there at my parents' house. Went to turn the record over to side two, and I heard someone calling out, and I looked out the window, and it was snowy out there, and the retaining wall there that held our yard up from the house downhill from us, the snow was kind of disturbed there. So I went outside, and I looked over the wall, and our neighbor was laying out there. He had been up on the icy roof trying to fix the roof for his wife as a Christmas present. He was there alone, and he had fallen from the roof and fallen onto the wall and fallen down below, and was laying there. And, well, he didn't make it through the day, and I was the last to first know the ambulance driver to talk to him. And my mom brought a blanket out, and I covered him up and talked to this man. We'd lived there next door to him for 8 years. I'd never spoken a word to him. He terrified me. He was always yelling at his kids and yelling at his wife. He had a stressful life, this fella. There in the snow and the rocks, he was kind of reduced to being a child again. This is for Frank, my mom and dad, and George, Paul, George, and Ringo. Beatles came to Kansas City, play the A's Stadium. Four poor lads from rainy England, I was too young to go and see them. I sang John's part, Paul's part, George's too. Ringo drummed a song the Beatles played in my living room. Neighbor Frank, 13 children, 6 Hail Marys, 7 Jobs. Outside my window, I couldn't hear him praying in his bed of snow. I sang John's part, Paul's part, George's too. Ringo drummed a song, Beatles played in my living room. Beatles came to Kansas City. My father brought them home to tea. They hugged my mom, kissed my sister, stayed up late to jam with me. I sang John's part, Paul's part, Ringo's too. George strummed his sad guitar. The Beatles played in my living room. I sang John's part, Paul's part, George's too. Ringo drummed the song. The Beatles played in my living room. The Beatles played in my living room. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. Well, let's see here. What'll I do for you? Maybe something rousing. This little song's called Traveler 2, T-O-O. I am a traveler too. Just like every soul in this world, and that's really all this little song is about, I suppose. Came to me in Ireland, a country I have been touring in every year for the last 20 years. And not the last couple, though. I wrote this song. It came to me in a place called Kilmore Quay on the Irish Sea. A place along the coast where they've had the most drownings, I guess, in Ireland, right there off Kilmore Quay. Not a place to bring your swimsuit, really. I was looking at the beautiful monuments there to the souls who've drowned off the coast, and out there on a cold February, windy, windy day, rocky shoreline, nobody out there but me, and the seagulls flopping around in the sky. I could barely stand up, it was so windy. I kind of got giddy for a minute, and this little song blew into my ear. It's a cloudy old day, but the sun's shining in my heart. I got a smile on my face, but the mirror says I'm falling apart. You know I gave everything away, what else could I do? Now my clothes, they're all frayed. I gotta shine on my worn-out shoes. Hello, unraveler, I'm unraveling just like you. Hello, traveler, oh, I'm a traveler too. All these folks in a hurry, bouncing down a bumpy road. Man, we all got trouble and worry following us wherever we go. When I found myself stranded, broke down and busted flat, some good soul pulled over and reaches out a helping hand. Hello, unraveling, I'm unraveling just like you. Hello, traveler, oh, I'm a traveler too. One act of kindness can make me start to cry, but man, that don't mean I'm blue. No, no. One thing that defines us in this uncertain life is the love that resides inside me and you. I'm a traveler too. Oh, 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 oh. It's shorter than the road behind. There's something to be said. Right now would be a real good time. It is a funny old life, full of wonder, joy, and pain. Man, we all get weary sometimes, just waiting for someone to say, hello, unraveling, I'm unraveling just like you. Hello, traveler. Oh, I'm a traveler too. Hello, traveler. Oh, I'm a traveler too. Hello, traveler. Yes, I'm a traveler. Hello, traveler. I'm a traveler. Hello, traveler. Oh, I'm a traveler. Hello, traveler.
this time they travel to
Excellent. So I just want to get into your impressions of that Beatles special some of you may have been watching. I know I have. And just kind of get your impression of it, and if it in any way compares to what it was like when you were in the studio with a band especially. I mean, it seems like they took a very long time for these songs to gestate, so to speak. But, I mean, could you relate to what you saw at all?
Well, yeah. I could relate to the tedium, you know, the tedious part of the of that whole thing, you know. Because, you know, as you know, I mean, you do something in a studio and even if you don't perform it 67 times in a day, which they did sometimes, it's interesting. There's that book about the sessions, the recording sessions of the Beatles. You probably have that.
Yes.
It's a great book, isn't it? It's fascinating. It's really well written. It's you just start looking at on a day, they'll say, you know, George came in today and he worked on Long, 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 and he worked 16 and a half hours and he did 67 takes. But he had the song with just a little idea when he brought it in. So they did that a lot. Back then, I mean, I think a lot of people did that were artists that could afford to do that. You know, you certainly can't do that nowadays. I mean, of course, people have home studios. They do a similar thing, I suppose. But what we do nowadays is just, you know, I get the songs arranged before I go into the studio. There's always one song that's new, though, and maybe even not quite finished, and we'll put that down. And we'll do several takes in a day of something. But we'll also get three or four songs finished in a day, a basic take of it, on a good day. That's a 6-7 hour day. And that's kind of cranking it out because you can't afford to run that clock that long. You know, it gets expensive. Plus, it's really wearying. I mean, I really, when I watched that, and I watched all three episodes, I'm actually going to go back in and watch parts of it again. But it's really a slog, I think, for anyone who... you know, gets bored with the tedium of things very quickly because it is really tedious to watch them do take after take after take of the same song. But it's interesting how each take's different. And, you know, like I said, they actually wrote that way a lot. You know, they'd have an idea, bring it in, they'd all kind of contribute to it. So I did do more of that kind of thing in the past with bands. So the band was Shake, the album we did, and the studio thing we did for MCA. And, a couple other projects, but usually that seems to be kind of the way things go now. Now, I haven't sat in on a, you know, major artist recording session. Well, you know what I'm saying, like a big label artist. I don't know Taylor Swift or something like that. I don't know how long she takes in the studio, but imagine they take a long time, I would think. But not like the Beatles did. They basically lived camped out in the studio. So, I mean, or I can relate to it, I can't either, because I also can't relate to where these people were. I mean, they were the Beatles. They'd come out of losing their manager. They couldn't even tour anymore because they couldn't hear themselves play. They'd only been working in a studio, and they'd all kind of begun their personal lives going in different directions. They were still very young men, you know, so... It's kind of sad. You and I were talking about this. It's kind of sad to watch it to me, too. But it's really, it's inspiring, too, to see the spirit, the creative spirit they each had. I mean, and I love Ringo, man. He hardly says anything. He just sits back there and watches it all and does his job. And when he says something, he's like the sanest one or the funniest one. He just has that zinger he throws in. But I kind of gained a little more personal insight into each of them, I felt like, watching that thing. And how they reacted to one another, interacted with one another. And again, going back to that communication idea, I just felt like, you know, they're having some big communication problems at that point
right.
with one another, obviously. So.
Does anybody have any questions they want to ask Dana Cooper up here? Does anybody have
Who
any
do you
questions?
Think you are?
Let's see. I think my imitation of Peter from Peter Paul and Mary kind of put them off a bit, Dana.
This gentleman has a question.
Do you have what's your question there?
Oh,
yeah. Is there any moment in your career when you say to yourself, "This is why I do it"? That aha moment, so to speak. Thank you, Dennis Double.
Well, I mean, really, every time I sing and get through a song and don't mess it up, I feel like I really accomplished something, you know. And when I write something and I'm really proud of it, I feel good about it, you know. And pleasing an audience, that when. When it pleases people and they can relate to it, that's the biggest thing for me. But as far as like, there was a time, I've had several of those moments where I felt like, yeah, this is kind of it. This is aha moment. This is why I do this. Only to sort of end up having that dashed, you know. I mean, I felt that way when I got signed to Electric Records, when they called me up and said, "We want to sign you to our label." I was like, wow, okay, you know, this is a, I mean, I knew it was a big thing. It was a big thing for me, but the reality of what that was and what that meant and the trajectory of where that went was just so, you know, different than that moment. But I had a lot of, when I moved to Texas and joined that band with Shake, there was a night where I realized I was driving home from a gig, and we were doing quite well. We were selling out all our shows everywhere we played in Houston. This one place we were playing, we played there three nights in a row, two shows a night, sold out every night. And like a 300-seat thing, you know. And I was just driving home thinking, man, this is really what I've been working toward, you know, to actually be able to make a living doing this and not have to take on another job. That was a big moment for me. And, you know, that eventually was dashed too.
No.
But it just led to the next thing, the next moment. You know, I mean, it all is really. I think, especially when I was young, I put way too much emphasis on all of that. You know, it's sort of like when I look back on it now. So, like I was saying, that friend of mine said, "Don't take any of it too seriously." You know, because it's sort of like it all led to the next thing. It's all really been good. It's just all been different. You know, from each stage to each stage. So.
Yes, Wendy, you have a question.
That's a real good question.
What genre do you... See, I'm repeating the question.
That's okay, people can hear
it. What genre do you classify yourself as?
That has always been... these days, I kind of fall into the Americana thing, but I don't know. I mean, that's always been a... That was... Always, when I dealt with record labels or publishers or anything, there was always the issue is that, you know, what is this? You know, how do we market this? Because I kind of write a little all over the place, you know. So, but I've always wanted to do that. And my models were people like the Beatles. And my goodness, you know, how would you categorize the Beatles? They were the Beatles. I mean, it was like they weren't, you know what I mean? They were pop, what were the pop combo or something is how they were first... categorized. I mean, they did country and folk and rock and psychedelic and, you know, blues. I mean, they went wherever they wanted to go. So I kind of, that's how I have never tried to sort of hone it down to a categorization. But in general, these days, people tend to call it Americana, I guess, because it's kind of rootsy and I'm playing acoustic guitar.
Makes sense. Does anyone else have any questions? Don't be shy.
You can ask me anything.
Okay, I do have a question, Lee. Okay. How cool was it to play Austin City Limits?
Oh, how very cool to play Austin City Limits. Yeah, that was a moment that you asked about, actually, playing on Austin City Limits, and that was 1981 or something like that.
That'd be cool.
It was a while back, but it was that was an incredible experience, and I was so impressed with the production of that show. You know, when he did that TV thing today, it was so fascinating. Lee and I were kind of watching them
we
do this thing.
Today.
I mean, it's fun to watch how a crew of people put something like that together, and it's pretty complex, and it was seamless. They did a great job, And of course, we were well rehearsed and had been really playing a lot and had a couple of successful albums out, and we're just sort of, you know, it was a nice ride there for a little bit.
Good. Excellent. Cool. All right. We're going to wrap it up with Dana doing a couple more songs. I just wanted to mention the fact that Dana has merch over there. Album CDs and your own clothing line. You have a Dana Cooper
I have a clothing line
over there.
Of sorts, yes. I have T-shirts, some very cool Always Old Friends T-shirts in many colors and sizes, and I've got a whole rack of Western shirts, vintage Western shirts, embroidered Western shirts.
Yes.
Embroidered with the Always Old Friends logo. And one of a kind. They're all different.
All different, really.
All different. Even the embroidery differs from each one of the colors and stuff. Yeah. And they can be yours.
Yeah, that's definitely distinctive, Dana Cooper, to Thank see you. Your yeah. own. Most people have T-shirts or whatever. You have actually nice Western shirts over there.
Yes. I
you don't see that very often.
You don't. Well, my manager, Corinne Tames, is the one who came up with that idea. So I give her the credit. She's
okay.
All right. Good idea.
And I'll say this too, that if you like the photos that you're seeing up there, those photos are from my book. And Elisa took all those photos. I mean, these fantastic. Awesome. And she has some prints for sale over there. And just so happens we do have a few books for sale. So we have a full potpourri of merch awaiting you and your dollars. I want to thank Lisa and Kat from Bird and the Book. I want to thank the staff. I want to thank the sound folks who helped us, the sound guys who helped get this together. I want to thank Roger for doing some video here. Thank you, Roger.
Yeah, Roger.
I want to thank my pal Billy here, who's no, really. You know, when people know how to do technical stuff, I'm, and this is true. I do not even know how to change the channels on our television set at home. At least I don't. I'm totally lost. So anytime somebody shows some technical proficiency, I'm totally, totally impressed. Well, of course, I want to thank Dana for doing this, man. This is the first sort of tryout. And how gracious is Dana Cooper for coming over and sort of helping to launch it unknown into space here. So
you're gracious to invite me, man. And to put me up, too.
And the name of our, I don't know if you want to do our outro here, Billy. You want to do our typical outro for this?
Yeah, is he going to do another song first? Or?
He's going to do another, okay,
yeah,
he should do the other song.
We'll wait after that.
But this, because we're recording it for the podcast, you'll be able to hear it once Billy does his magic and the editing. It'll be on like 20 different platforms. It'll be fantastic. So anyway, all right. With that, Dana, why don't you do a couple of songs, take us out of here. Again, tip your waiters and waitresses, and really, most of all, I just got to say this. Seriously, thank you all for coming. I mean, it means more than you can imagine to see y'all here. Thank you. All right? Okay.
Yes, I want to thank y'all for coming, too, and thank Lee for doing this, and Billy, and guys in the sound, and Lisa, everybody. What's that now? So I do a little tune here called Standing a Mountain Way. Really, this comes from a little conversation I've had with myself just about every day of my life, one time or another during the day. I realize I need to just lighten up a little bit. There goes me, giving in easily, trying too hard to please, soft in the middle, faithlessly,
chickening out on me, blaming that big machine, hurtling riddles, frightening little, standing in my own way. Here am I, questioning where, how, why, watching my life go by. Man, I don't wanna blow it. Contrary me, begging to disagree, making mistakes in threes. I'm wrong and I know it, too proud to show it. I'm just standing in my own way, standing in my own way. Doomsayer, giving that satisfied grin, out of my way to trigger. Don't be so darn sure you'll win. We are through. I haven't room for two. I'm stepping right over. Open that front door, 'cause here I come, banging my broken drum, chasing that grinning sun. I'm winning this soul war. There'll be no more standing in my own way. Oh, there'll be no more standing in my own way. Standing in my own way, no more standing in my own way. Ooh, standing in my own way. So we'll do one more here.
Let's have another one.
All right.
Yeah.
Go way up there. Way down there. Let's see what happens here. This is a little G-tuning thing.
Yeah, do a song where you don't have to retune.
So this one is called Thank You. And it came out of one of those days when I wasn't feeling particularly fortunate, which I really know is ridiculous. I have everything to be totally happy for and grateful for. But once in a while, like anybody, I get down. I have my days, and I'm kind of getting that self-pity mode. I was having one of those days. I was on the road. Been on the road for 3 weeks, had 3 weeks to go before I got home. I was missing home and had a bill out there I was having problems paying, and my back was going out, and I just thought, boy, I just having a rough day. So I was up in Portland, Oregon. It was a rainy day there, and huh? Okay, yeah, you got it. So I was just kind of gave in, had a pity party for myself. I made myself a cup of orange Pekoe tea and with no sweetener in it. And I just stared at it until the tea bag started crumbling and tea leaves are floating in the oily, tepid water. So I'm just going to sit here and chew on my bitter, tepid tea and look out at the dismal, rainy day and feel bad for myself. And I just about choked down that whole cup of tea. And the sun decided to come out of the clouds. Portland, Oregon,
was transformed into paradise on earth all of a sudden. Hummingbirds started swarming all these feeders that everybody has in their yards. You can't look at a hummingbird and feel bad, so I went out in the backyard and I kicked my boots off. Put the guitar in G tuning. Started thinking about all the wonderful people in my life. Three cats live in this house. I'm just a guest passing through. They run around all night, sleep away the afternoon. One has a zigzaggy tail, and one is as white as a pearl. One only hides, never lets me into a world. I gotta thank you, whoever you are. Thank you for my breaking heart. Thank you for the chance to play my little part. Panther on a windowsill, rabbit in the wet green grass, Rufus and Annie's hearts and wings beating fast. One day I'm filled to the brim, next day the whole thing spills out wide open again. I'm wondering what it's all about. Still I gotta thank you, whoever you are. Thank you for my breaking heart. Thank you for this chance to play my little part. Each one of us is a universe in our small ways. Hey, hey! I'm dying to know what that means. A life of waiting tills won't fill the yearning in between. Oh, 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 thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the chance to play my little part.
Take us out of here, Dana, with a little instrumental there. Just want to say big thanks to Dana Cooper, the bird in the book here, and our host, Lee Zimmerman. Check out Lee's book, Americana Music, Voices, Visionaries, and Pioneers of an Honest Sound, now available on Amazon. Also, please like, share, and subscribe to My Backstage Pass on your favorite platform, and we'll see you next time. Happy trails.
Happy trails.